Hello, Amina. Welcome to the show. I wanted to ask you, first off, what musicians influenced your style of playing?
It's hard to tell about few musicians that influenced my playing or my style or even composition, because I think it take a lifetime to work on your style, and along the way there are always are incredible musicians, not necessarily always what you call big names that influence you. And sometimes something very modest, a little maybe modest solo of not very well known musician can influence you more than a very well known musician. And besides, books influence me a lot as well. So that's why I can't tell the, of course, incredible names of as Miles Davis and Jill Evans as the incredible arranger, and Herbie Hancock and McCoy Tyner and Tommy Flanagan and Kenny Barron, but also Rachmaninoff and Horowitz and so many, many musicians. It's hard for me to pin it on a few names. It's a huge list.
Now, what do you consider the most important quality in a musician?
Although it's different to generalize musicians and style, in spite of, I think I can answer this question by pointing out maybe the most important quality of, I guess, all the players and at the same time composers. It's the honesty. Because you see, music is such a thing, you can't lie in music. The personality comes absolutely 100%, it comes out in the music. And I guess just the differences of the great personality of each musician, and it's like when you listen to most of these people, it's like you're communicating with them through their playing, through their music, through their composition. And to me, I don't like to separate too much, in fact, playing from composing, especially in jazz, because improvisation is instant composing. And before, in 19th and 18th and 17th century, people used to improvise on classical music. The same Mozart and Haydn, they had kind of contests with each other, how they were competing by with each other by improvising their own music. So, as I tell, to me, improvisation is constant composition. That's why I don't really want to separate these two items. But again, the great personality comes out in the style, and that's what takes me into the incredible trip. It's like reading a book, to the incredible trip of personality, of the philosophy. And it's not too much, for me anyway, about concentrating on, I don't know, model playing or playing out, like, you know, you're studying probably model playing and you study McCoy Tyner and you're going into the Bud Powell for the certain thing, or you're going to Miles Davis for a certain thing. But to me, it's more about the personality that comes out in their playing and language they talk. It's the lifetime experience. It's much deeper than just licks and notes and phrases, to me anyway.
Amina, do you listen to older recordings to maybe get some fresh ideas about how to phrase or how to play certain chords or whatever?
Yes, of course I listen to the older recordings, and again, it's not just older jazz recording, it's classical recordings I listen, but it's not necessarily for me, or maybe even not at all, to learn techniques, ideas. Of course, if you like something, it will probably stay, even if you don't try right away incorporate the idea into actual playing. It's something will always stay somewhere at the I don't know, lowest or highest shelf of your memory, and will come out one day. But first, to me, music is very emotional, and I would listen to what I want to hear at the moment. Depends really on my mood, and or if I have to listen something, because you know it's a part of practicing. If you play with a band, you have to listen their recordings or something. But yes, to me, it's listening to more get into the time. If you listen to recordings of, for example, I was listening not a long time ago to recordings of Ella Fitzgerald when she was very, very young. And it's not just about the band and Ella and the techniques. It's almost emotion picture. I would think about a certain period, I don't know, 1950s and that period of time, and it's like drinking water, drinking some juice of this time into yourself. This is more that anyway, like how I can describe my experience when I listen to this music. To this, I mean, to any older music, and I love all kind of arts and paintings and architecture, and I try to put it together in my mind, visualize it to get a real feel of the time.
I'd like you to describe the concept of seeking out different musical challenges to better yourself as a player.
I think actually any situation might be a musically challenging situation, depends what you make out of. I don't like to play safe anyway and like to take chances when I play. And when we play with the band, I love to bring new pieces right on the right on the concert. And my band, they know me. They know that I'll probably come with something crazy, fast, unreadable, unplayable, and just with no rehearsal. Because I don't know why should you play safe. In fact, because it's a moment notice that. The whole the story of playing is a moment notice, and that's what's great about the concert. You do the most incredible thing because of the communication with the audience, with the place, with the whole atmosphere. But I can't say that I do look for certain situations or specific projects, but when they come on my way, I really love it. And I can give an example. I worked with an incredible Israeli singer. I mean, I can't say she is Israeli, but she grew up in Europe and she lived all her life in Europe. But she does sing in Hebrew, and it's a combination of Hebrew music and jazz and funk and fusion and all the combinations in the music with even, how can you describe the ethnical percussion sounds in it. And we played several concerts. We really enjoyed it. And so she asked me to work with her and to write maybe new music. But I do have to write it on the lyrics in Hebrew, which I don't speak at all and I don't understand. And probably, you know, you can imagine that I can't read it because you even have to read it from right to left. So it's really, this is really challenging to write in a language that you don't speak, don't know, and don't understand. Of course, I'll get translations, but it's, you know, it's anyway words that you even don't know how to break them or how to separate or how to break the phrase. So I think this is challenging, and I don't know what will come my way tomorrow.
Are there any musicians who are no longer with us that you would have loved to have performed with?
Well, this is really a hard one. Which musicians that no longer with us? Boy, there are so many musicians I would love to play with. But, you know, I believe in a personal contact, and I don't know if, I mean, you see it also often on stage, mainly when you have all these all-star bands, you see that the two great musicians and the personalities don't match, and that might hurt music. So I think if I look into that, I would tell that I would rather first meet a person before probably I'm gonna play it. But I maybe on another hand not, because I would be so happy to play with so many great musicians that I would just put my personality probably way back just to play with people again. I would love to. Oh my God, there are so many names I can mention. It will be way too long list, and it will go back not just to the jazz musicians but also to the classical musicians. And maybe it's I don't know, cliche to say, but Miles Davis would be on the top of the list. Reasons why? Because there is magic when he played, and even, you know, he didn't have to play so many notes, just few, to create incredible atmosphere and to make absolute statement, and going really deep with just few notes. I think that would be anyway number one on my list.
Now, if you had a dream band, who would it consist of?
Well, if I had to make recording with any musicians, or if I had to form a dream band, it might sound maybe, I don't know, ambitious or funny, but again, there are incredible musicians I would love to play with, and it's again a very long list of the musicians to mention, and bass and drums are the most important, because it's a rhythm section, and that's what I would think of first. And there are some incredible musicians I did play already with, but you know what? I believe in band very much. I do believe in good relationships, personal relationships, and creating music to me, it's on stage. It's just making love to each other all the time and exchanging the most intimate. It's kind of very intimate conversation that's going on during the concert. So that's why, for now, at this moment, I love my band. I have actually two different bands, and I love those guys, and I play with a big pleasure in with them. And we became such a unity, you know, like one huge body with a 10 in case of quintet and 14 in case of septet hands, that for now, I don't know, I can't even tell if I would want to do something different. I'm happy with the band I have now, and I don't know if it's a dream band, because you never know what comes on your way tomorrow, but for now on, yes, I can dream on with my guys on stage, and this is really important to me.
Now, regarding pianos, is there a particular brand of piano that you prefer?
You know, as a piano player, you don't always get to choose the instrument. Unfortunately, you just gotta play what you get. And sometimes it's really nice surprise, but sometimes you look at it and you wonder how to make a sound out of the thing. But mainly when I get to choose, or when I can take it with me, I enjoy playing Steinway. Why? It's very personal taste. Taste is a very personal thing. I can't tell why Steinway to me, but because I have probably classical background, and I think it's the instrument I can with equally, with the same feeling, probably play classical or jazz music. It's kind of response to anything you do. I also love Bösendorfer, but to me it's more the classical instrument, and Yamahas are great, but Steinway is my first choice.
I have to ask you, Amina, why the piano? Of all the instruments out there, what was it that drew you to the piano?
Well, I don't know what made me decide to play piano, because I was just two when I started, and nobody pushed me into the piano was there, and I just discovered it. I just hardly was walking. And I was discovering probably like each child, everything that came along my way, and everything I could touch and push and make sound. I loved sounds, obviously. And there was a piano, and I start push the keys, and it makes sound. And seems I started to pretty fast in a few days to play songs I heard on radio and TV with one hand, and then I tried to figure out with second hand, and that's the way it went. You know, I didn't choose it; it chose me.
Can you talk about your listening habits when you were growing up as a child?
I listened very different type of music, and as you know, I grew up in former Soviet Union, and most of the people think somehow that there was no jazz or not possibility to listen to the jazz or any Western music, but it's not exactly true. And I grew up with, of course, lots of classical music and great classical music, but also a lot of popular music, and my choice went always to Motown music. I really loved anything by then. It was, then and now to me, Stevie Wonder and Barry White, and anyway, all the Motown musicians and artists. And there was also jazz, and I must say that my parents loved jazz as well, and I was introduced to, in a very early age, to an Oscar Peterson and Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong and a great jazz musician, so I listened to it all, but mainly as a teenager. I grew up, I was even DJ at certain point at conservatory, so classical music as a classical student, lots, and a lot of Motown.
Now, living in the former Soviet Republic, I'd like to ask you, was your family musical when you were growing up? Did they possess any musical attributes?
My whole, family is very musical. My parents are very musical. My mother has absolute pitch, and my grandmother and my uncles. My grandmother was very musical. She played several instruments. My uncle can sing, but there are no musicians in the family. I'm the one. The most of them of my family are doctors, and mostly doctors. But it was a family tradition to come together and to make music together. So in this way, music was always in the family.
Now, if you had to go to a desert island, which recordings would you take with you?
Which recordings I would take on a deserted island? You know, I would probably take a grand piano with me and other recordings, because I can't stand even idea being somewhere without possibility to play, and I think that's what I would do.
Now, tell us a little bit about some of your childhood musical memories.
My musical memories growing up, as I've told, lots of music made at home, just with the family. I would listen just to almost anything, and when I was really little, when I started to play, and then playing piano when I was already 3-4, it just became my toy. I loved playing, and I would put all the toys around the grand piano, and because when I was 2 we had an upright piano, and then when my mother saw that I started to play so early, and she understood that I will go somewhere really seriously into the music, she almost right away bought me a grand piano. So I had grand piano, and I would put all my toys around. That was my audience. And I would play until you really stop me. I would just play day and night. And because it was my favorite game in the world. And another thing to me was, as I realize now, that's actually kind of, studying composition or anything, but when I was little, I loved to play images. I was describing on piano any image, whatever, rain, sunshine, butterflies, clouds, I loved to describe anything, any experience I had. I even will never forget, I was really little then, I guess 5 or 6, and I went with my grandfather, and I had some magazine with me, kind of kids magazine that I forgot. And then when I came home, I thought, oh, I forgot my magazine. And then I was not sad or crying. I just went on piano and I started to play a song that I was that I forgot my magazine in the park. And I wouldn't remember this because I was too little, but my grandfather kept on reminding me that story all the time, you know, that he found so incredible. I was making right away a song about the magazine that I forgot. So all my impressions were translate into the music always, and I think that's a great memory to me. And besides, we had incredible choice of the concerts. You could see at a Philharmonic, at concert halls. I loved the theater as well, and I was going a lot to the drama theater and opera. So I was lots of out on the concerts, and I drank it all, you know, all I could see and hear and follow and listen to. I just, this was the biggest part of my life, studying music and listening to it, all kinds of.
Now, when you were young, what did you study in school?
You know, we studied classical music at school, really very structural. So at early age, you do play mostly classical composers, I would say, a lot of Haydn, Kuhlau, Clementi, Mozart, Bach, always Bach, and of course all the studies by Czerny. And later on, only like 5-6 years later, you get more into the romantics. And so, of course, they were all influencing me and also my writing. And at the early age, I remember I would have preferred, I preferred Mozart to Bach. And then later, of course, I got much more into Bach music. And on a later stage, I don't remember what it was, 12, 13, when I played a concerto for piano and orchestra by Chopin, I was totally in Chopin. And then it went transformation from Chopin to Liszt and Rachmaninoff. And I think that stayed more. I'm anyway more romantic player, but I can't tell that I'm just romantic player because I love Bach. I think this is most incredible genius jazz composer of the all the centuries, and nobody came up to Bach, to my opinion, so far yet, to Bach's levels, I mean. And well, Mozart and Haydn, which I adore as well, but I think still I can characterize myself more as a romantic player.
I'm interested, Amina, do you do any teaching?
I taught for a really short period at conservatory, I guess it was like 2 years or something, and I was traveling a lot. Different students I had, there were a few really gifted students. You know, every kind of student can influence you. Even, let's say, roughly not very gifted, but student that practices a lot will come with incredible ideas just by practicing. It will anyway stimulate you to practice. So it's always something you gain by. To me, teaching is learning, and learning is teaching. At Conservatory Baku, I really taught for a short time because I was teaching and traveling at the same time, and then actually I was invited to the Netherlands, and that's where I came, and then become kind of extended to stay here.
Now, how did meeting new musicians influence your style of playing and your whole concept of music?
Oh, the Stade Thelonious Monk Colony in Aspen was incredible. It was a great experience. It's a beautiful idea to bring students together with absolutely wonderful musicians together. And because you're staying in the same hotel, you're like, you know, you're constant in contact with each other. That's why it's more than just, you know, taking lessons. It's getting to know these people, and it's also getting to know each other. And the musicians that invited, the students that invited, they are really gifted students. So it's an incredible environment you are. And yes, I was introduced to wonderful, absolutely fantastic musicians, and of course it influenced me, and it, I cannot specify in which way, many ways, and it's motivated me a lot, just watching so close Kenny Barron and Monty Alexander and a wonderful saxophonist Dr. Nathan Davis and Terrence Blanchard. And actually that's the where I've met a wonderful musician, a flugelhorn player, Dmitry Matheny, and we became friends, and now we play together. We are in each other's band.
I have to ask you, Amina, what was your experience like when you went to Berklee College in Boston?
Berklee College in Boston, of course I couldn't wait to get there because I've heard so much about it, so I was indeed thrilled to get there. And at first I had a really a very funny experience because when I got there and I got to the first teacher, first question they asked me, do you know scales? Can you play C major for me? And I was speechless because I had a different expectation. You know, I thought, oh, well, you just would be thrown out into the lions and they will talk about the most incredible hard things. So I thought, like, C major, what you talking about? And that's incredible. I understood that Berklee College of Music is for each level of musician. You can start from nothing and you can be very developed or mediocre developed musician. But the thing is about Berklee College of Music that you've got, you know, talent, guts. You will get there no matter which level you start. And I learned to know many musicians and great students, and we remain friends until today. So it was absolutely great experience. And stay in Boston and travel up and down to New York and watch the great musicians in clubs. This was a magic period for me, absolutely.
Now, as a performer, do you prefer the studio environment or the richness of a live performance?
A studio or live, it's very different, because in studio you can go on and perfect your recording, while in studio, live, I mean, it's just the way you play, the way it is. And I like both. First, I have to tell that I don't do in studio that, you know, re-recording and again new track and again new track. Just two, three tracks and the best comes mainly number one or number two. Like Firewind CD, I guess, with the whole septet, I don't know how many songs, 10, 11, we recorded in one day. So I try to create a more or less live situation in the studio with the possibility to repair if it's really necessary something. And that's the anyway my idea going into studio. And live recording is very different because somehow a live I don't know, in studio probably because you just hear yourself back, or you hear yourself in the headsets, you're kind of more aware of what you're doing. In spite of me that I love to take chances when I play. Anyway, in studio, you're more aware of what you're doing. And on a concert, it's just all about the atmosphere. And again, there is an audience you're communicating with, and that's completely different. So I have both. I have live recorded concerts, and I have studios, studio recorded CDs. They're all very different. I can't tell what I like more. I guess both. Of course, live recordings, if they're really good concerts, and if the atmosphere are great. But I can't. It's hard to tell what I like more. Both.
I'd like to ask you, how important are live shows?
You know, Musical Diana, it's not about recording, it's more about live shows we did. Because somehow, here in Netherlands anyway, the recordings of the musical don't play such a big role anyway as the live shows. And the live shows went really, they were great. But we did add some extras on recording. We added some strings, and we just added some extra things. And I took a theme, the fairy tale theme, and I brought it out on a recording, like a prelude, like an overture to the musical, which we didn't do live. Can I say I emphasized some moments of the musical in the recording? And I mean, it was received really well, because the whole musical. Got also prize for the best female role, and it's one women musical. So, but once more, musicals in the Netherlands are more about the show and not so much about the recording. It's just like an extra.
Now, on a personal note, Amina, I'm interested to find out how you came about meeting your husband. I know it's a very interesting story, and I'd like you to share it with us.
Well, this is a very romantic question. That was somewhere in 1991, I believe. I was recording in a studio of Conservatory of Rotterdam in the Netherlands, and it's a student studio, and I was allowed as a student of the jazz department to record a couple of songs I wrote. And it was, by the way, not a jazz composition, it was more pop R&B composition called Midnight. And I made appointment with a flugelhorn player to come and play at 11. And we rehearsed and we've been ready, but he didn't show up. And I had only limited time in the studio. And if I wouldn't record on this day, I would have to wait for, I don't know, several months. So I was in panic. And I ran off the studio and I went to the concierge and I asked, "What do you think? Who can, you know, come upright like now and play for me?" He says, "Well, I know one flute player." And I was like, "I don't need a flute player. I need a trumpet or a flugelhorn player." He says, "Well, this guy has weird kind of things. It's called EWI, and it's kind of synthesizer. That's what I've heard about. And I've heard that there is also sound of Miles Davis coming out of the EY. So I thought, well, Miles Davis will work. Let's call the guy." So I called. It was Bart Plateau. And he was actually touring somewhere in the country. And he was just for half an hour at home. And told I'm coming, and he came. And then he never left.
Do you ever experience any difficulties when you're recording with your piano?
Unfortunately, I cannot do recording our duo here because of their weather change, summer to getting cold now. My piano went completely out of tune, and I have this incredible tuner that I have to wait for another month that will come here. He's so incredible indeed that it's very hard to get him. So, and we don't have also a very good equipment to to record it on good level. But there is a good example of our communication on the Pine Hill 1 recording. It's called Life in Europe, Jazz at the Pine Hill, Life in Europe. And I would look up the name of the title of the piece, and I will email you the title of the piece, where we play with the bando, but you hear us talking. And yes, if we play we don't play so often with duo, as a duo, we play mainly with band. But we do do duo kind of thing with the band, just the way we did it on that recording. And it's pure about communicating, talking, teasing, a lot of teasing, and asking questions and see if he can follow up or another way around. So that's sometimes mean, sometimes kind. But it's, anyway, all about communication between us.
One of my favorite recordings of yours, Amina, is Night Train. Now, I'd like you to discuss that recording.
Thank you very much. I'm happy that you like Night Train. It's a special recording to me because it's different from all another recordings we did. It's very conceptual. It's very story kind of recording, and interesting to me that I came up with the idea of the interludes only later, only at the end. And I'm glad I came up with the idea because I think that it's really created that unity, kind of sweet almost unity, because this train stops, this interludes, the themes of Night Train, they connect somehow well the music and makes it whole. I felt only after the interludes that yes, now I have it, like the whole story. And the reason why I did the stories in the booklet of the CD and the music on the CD, you know, I had a few discussions with several people that told me, we don't need to hear your story, we can make our own stories. So, but, you know, I think that you don't have to read my stories, the diaries, but you can, it's a choice you have. But the thing is, the reason why I had story, because to me, and that was just a statement that I want to make, to me, a music should tell you a story. And if it just notes and has no story, then it can be played incredible, but it doesn't have as much as value as, like if you hear, I don't know, solo of Miles Davis on Summertime with Gil Evans. He can play just one chorus with few notes, but it tells you so much. There is such a deep story behind it, not just the summertime and the living is easy and fish is jumping. No, there is so much more. What he's telling is a very different story. And that's why I wrote that stories. And actually, the whole life, it's kind of journey with a one-way ticket. So that's probably another philosophical point of view, or reason, not a point of view, but a reason why I, you know, made that recording.
Now, what musicians do you like to listen to, Amina?
Hans Benning and Misha Mengelberg, these two musicians I love to hear together. Their incredible individualities that work perfectly in a beautiful team together, and both of them have their own very individual, very high-level style. And Miles Davis and Oscar Peterson. Why I want to put these two names together, because they're so different. It's so two north and south pole to me. A very transparent, not always, but very often very transparent, but very deep, philosophical, tri-dimensional Miles Davis with a brilliant and in many words and very highly technical, incredible Oscar Peterson. And that's why I love both of these musicians, because they're so incredible and so different, absolutely so different. I've listened to them, by the way, both a lot. Tom Harrell, I've heard him for the first time a long time ago, I think it was in Boston. And I really fell in love with his playing then, and for his sound, his ideas. Duke Ellington, well, this is another god in jazz. I love his compositions, of course. I can't even tell. It's not just sophisticated lady, but it's also sophisticated and so beautiful. It's just so beautiful. Wayne Shorter, well, it's in a, I think for so many years, it's incredible influence for so many composers, and his music is so rich, it's something you can listen all over and over and over again, and every time you will discover something new. Absolutely incredible.
I'd like to thank you for dropping by the show today and sharing some of your comments and experiences with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed it. And talking about having challenging or looking for the challenge in your life, I think this interview was very challenging because your questions are really very interesting and make you think really well. So, thank you again.